The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.
With me is Conor Faulkner, consultant and advisor, and Ellen Coyle, political correspondent at the Irish Times, to look at the stories making the news this morning, including the presidential election polling and interesting polling in the Irish Times, not so much on the presidential election itself, but on the impact of that election on the parties. And it is hard, Ellen, to see it in any other way than a disaster for Fianna Fáil.
It's an absolutely dire poll for Fianna Fáil. So this is the Ipsos BNA poll commissioned for the Irish Times. And originally we thought that the headline figure was going to be what came out on Thursday, which showed Catherine Connolly with a dominant commanding lead of 38% to Heather Humphrey's 20%, almost double what the Fine Gael candidate was on. But what you see on the front page today is really the aftermath of the implosion of Fianna Fáil's campaign. The party itself has dropped 5 percentage points to 17%. And what I suppose might feel more politically existential for the Taoiseach is that his personal satisfaction rating has plummeted 11 percentage points to 33%. And my colleague Pat Leahy in his column is just setting out how bad that is. For the last year, Micheál Martin has very much been the most popular of the three main party leaders. And it's impossible to see this as anything other than a backlash from the base over their absolute fury about what happened with the Fianna Fáil campaign and the fact that the party is not fulfilling its desire to contest its first presidential election in almost 30 years.
Now, what are you hearing from within the party and among fellow travellers? Because not only do we have the unprecedented situation of a presidential campaign collapsing and imploding on itself, we have the former Taoiseach coming out repeatedly to express his anger and resentment about the way that he was treated and the fact that he believes he would have romped home in the current setting. What effect is that having?
Well, I suppose, you know, Bertie Ahern has his detractors, but nobody can say that he wouldn't still be in the race if he was the candidate now. And I suppose what is kind of calcifying now is now that it appears that it would be, you would need a political earthquake for Heather Humphreys to win. You're also going to have the backlash against Fianna Fáil of people asking, you know, did the exit of Jim Gavin from the campaign and the mismanagement of that campaign effectively help to guarantee that Catherine Connolly gets into the Oris? Because the loss of those transfers is a huge blow to Heather Humphrey's campaign. Obviously, some Fianna Fáil voters are feeling pretty lethargic about going out. It's so offensive for them to go into a polling booth to see the party name next to a candidate that they're wasting their time voting for.
And yeah, it's one thing to transfer to the blue shirts, it's another to give them the number one.
Which, I mean, it would have been, there was so much optimism in Fine Gael last month that this was going to be their first ever chance to win the presidency. The party has never held the presidency in its entire history. So it's not just about, you know, Fianna Fáil's natural competitiveness being extinguished by what happened. It's the fact that they may have helped Catherine Connolly, basically, because Jim Gavin isn't in the race. Heather Humphreys is going to suffer now from those transfers because Fianna Fáil voters are not going to come out in the same numbers. And the next week is going to be spent by people like Dara O'Brien, who was out campaigning in Howth last night with Heather Humphreys, trying to say to the centre, this is the sensible candidate. This is the person who most aligns with your views. And if you have concerns about Catherine Connolly, you need to come out and vote. But it's a hard sell at this point.
And it's unusual, Conor, that normally when you have a political poll, it's a bit like judging financial markets. You know, post-factum inference, you try to figure out what's caused it. There's no question about this poll about what's caused that drop for Fianna Fáil.
Well, there's a pretty clear line of cause and effect, isn't it? And look, there's a couple of things out of it. Firstly, there's the presidential election itself. But if we just park that and consider Fianna Fáil's position, the ham-fisted handling of every aspect of the process is never going to be a good look. Now, I will say that we're 1 year, in theory, we're 4 years away from a general election. And like mid-Dáil last time around, Sinn Féin seemed unassailable. I think everybody knows that we're years out from a general election. And that tends to facilitate kickbacks and protests and angry votes, and a presidential election is kind of non-typical. People will vote for different reasons.
But just to give the numbers of that gap while you're talking, Conor, yeah. Sinn Féin currently sitting on 27%.
Up according, 5.
And Fianna Fáil on 17, Fine Gael on 18. So effectively they are two-thirds the size in popularity terms of Sinn Féin. That's clear blue water.
Yeah, and we've seen the same, a similar amount of clear blue water was in evidence 4 or 5 years ago in the middle of the last Dáil. And you always, I think, have to be sceptical when polls are this bouncy. Because what it might tell you is you might think your support is wide, but it evidently isn't terribly deep. So where did those percentage points go off the Fianna Fáil total? Was it the faithful who are furious about the Jim Gavin debacle? Was it Munster Fianna Fáilers who feel completely left out of the presidential election? Or was it the sort of floating middle voters who actually will decide the general election when it comes around, and they look at incompetence and they see incompetence as a bad look? But the only thing I would say, if you were Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael, is that the presidential election, much as we revere our presidency, it's a bit of a sideshow. You've got 4 years left. If you can put a dent in housing, if you can get the children's hospital fixed, if you can keep the arrows economically pointing upwards, then there's every chance that, you know, they'll be able to go into the next general election in good shape.
It does go to competence a bit, though. Surely people will make an extrapolation where they will say, well, if they are incapable of organising this particular piss up in a brewery, how can they do the big stuff?
Yeah, well, incompetence is never going to be a good look. And there's absolutely no way of spinning the presidential campaign in a positive term. But more broadly, on the presidential election, it's a really disappointing election process. We're not going to get the president we want. There are not enough candidates on the ballot. I think most people with a sense of natural justice would feel instinctively that Maria Steen should be on the ballot paper. Actually, I think if she was, it would be immensely helpful to Heather Humphreys, because I don't think those transfers would go to Catherine Connolly. But that's by the by, in a sense. We don't have enough people represented on the ballot paper. Now, we want a process whereby headbangers like Conor McGregor don't get anywhere near it. Legitimate people like Maria Steen, even if you don't like her politics, do. So, you know, how do you design those filters and hoppers? The current system we have with the Rock, the signatures, our local authority one, you know, seems to make a bit of sense on paper. But when Fianna Fáil, as they did this time in Fine Gael, apply the whip right across local and national government, so frustrating the ability of others to get on the ballot. I think we need to look back.
But sure, what else will they do? I mean, surely that whip is implicit, even if it's not made explicit as it was in this election.
Well, you know, again, I think, and Ellen might have a view on this as well, the experience of past presidential elections, it is a hell of a thing to volunteer for. I mean, if you were, you know, the job in the Oris is a lovely job, Anton, you'd be brilliant at it. But were you to contemplate it, you would have to contemplate the fact that every journalist in the country is going to spend 3 months combing through your litter bins, figuratively, your digital footprint over the last 20 years. They're going to contact every neighbour, every friend. And if there's anything in there with the potential to embarrass you or your family, then it's going to surface, and you either wind up in the Oris or you'll be hugely bruised and damaged by the process. And that's, well, just not good.
With that in mind, that in theory lends itself towards former politicians running for office, because they have been through this before. They are blooded. They have that experience. Jim Gavin falls by the wayside. You're writing a very interesting analysis in the Irish Times today, Alan, about the Heather Humphreys campaign. And Damp Squib comes to mind. How is it that with an open goal, in theory, Heather Humphreys has failed to be stellar?
So when Mairead McGuinness dropped out of the presidential race for health reasons, there was immediately a swell of optimism behind Heather Humphreys. And, you know, we might get some revisionist history from Fine Gael this time next week. But some people thought, with full respect to Mairead, that Heather was a better candidate than Mairead McGuinness. Because if you talk to anyone in Leinster House, yeah, 100%. I mean, some of the things, I was doing a profile on Heather, and some of the things that people were saying were so effusively positive that I couldn't print them because it would look like the Irish Times was actually endorsing her. Because the people who know her privately over the last 14 years of national politics adore the woman. She's very gregarious, she's very funny, but the issue is that Heather Humphreys that I've seen snatches on from covering the campaign has not appeared or been shown to the public. She is trapped in the kind of this hermetically sealed cage of being a former minister, and she's just fallen into the trap of constantly defending the government. The other thing that is really curious to me is I was covering Heather Humphreys' campaign a lot this week. I spent most of the week in Cavan, Monaghan, Meath, Louth, places that I would have thought that Heather Humphreys would be home and hosed. And anytime we went to an event, so we showed up on a farm in Meath, it was stacked with local farmers that were never going to vote for anyone else but Heather Humphreys. We weren't meeting the undecided voters, this now crucial centre ground, whether it's your kind of centre left, Brian Leddon, Alan Kelly type people, or whether it's your disenchanted Fianna Fáilers. They're not going to be, you know, the North East, even Fianna Fáilers in the North East were going to vote for Heather Humphreys even before Jim Gavin pulled out. So I know that presidential elections are supposed to be transmissible. You're supposed to focus on national media because it's the easiest way to reach the broadest number of people in the quickest possible way. But you need to reach them on a personal basis. And I was eavesdropping on her when I arrived at her house on Thursday to do the interview, and she was doing a local media interview. And it was everything from the current government's commitment to cut childcare to €200 to the legislation that lifted the ban on forced evictions. Nothing to do with the presidency. And I think just a final point, over the last 14 years, we've had a very popular president who has been critical of the government at the exact same time that anti-government sentiment has grown. This anti-Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael base has kind of calcified as the main aim of the left-wing movement at this point in time. So I think that to be a former Fine Gael or former Fianna Fáil minister, had we had, or politician, had we had Billy Kelleher, is more of a curse than a blessing in a presidential election.
Texts say, Anton, at least Fianna Fáil have the Jim Gavin debacle as an excuse. What's Fine Gael and Simon Harris's excuse? They're in danger of being lapped in a two-horse race. 53106, it costs 30 cents if you have a viewer. 087-1400-106. The other thing that is making the news this weekend is the continuing squabble, disagreement, whatever you want to call it, between Ray D'Arcy and RTE. Ray saying that he was given no notice in respect of the conclusion of his contract. RTE saying he was given literally months of notice. Connor, you have appeared many times on Ray D'Arcy's programme.
I have,
both
yes.
In Today FM and in RTE. What's your take on it?
He's a lovely guy. He's a really talented broadcaster. But look, I think if you ask a punter on the street, does RTE need to be shaken up? It'll be an unambiguous poll result, Ellen. Everybody's going to say yes. Patricia Monaghan, late of this parish, highly respected executive, clearly knows what she's doing, and is clearly a strong person in there. I think it sends a signal to everybody else in Montrose. I'm a little bit disappointed, and I don't know the ins and outs. And you know, look, we've had experience in business. I've had the experience. If you have to fire somebody, unless you're a strange sort of person, that's never a pleasant experience, and it should weigh on you a bit. But I thought Ray D'Arcy's reaction came across as a little bit peevish, and I think that's disappointing. It would have been nicer if he did a full lap of honour and then probably came back on RTE TV in one way, shape. You know what RTE is like. You can go out one door with a great deal of fanfare and walk back in the side door the next minute. So his RTE career,
reading between the lines in some of his statements, I don't get the sense that there was a particularly large or attractive side door being offered, which maybe
no. And then you did get a sense of like rattles being jettisoned from prams. And but look, RTE's been criticised for many years, and I think it was true for a period that their anchor presenters were getting paid way over market rate. I mean, they're just being paid way over. These people were like lotto winners. It was crazy what they were getting. And it transpired that actually it's Radio 1 that had the charisma, not the person sitting in the chair. So with a couple of noble exceptions, so like Claire Byrne, for example, it's the time slot that has the audience. I mean, I remember my late father-in-law, when Pat Kenny moved to News Talk, he literally got another radio to put on his kitchen counter. So when it was Pat Kenny time, he turned one off and the other on. So, and yet if you're sitting in the chair, you can be convinced that, look, it's my charisma that's doing all of this. So I think it's a bit of a wake-up call for everybody in RTE and maybe a bit of a recalibration. But for Ray D'Arcy himself, he's a talented guy. He's very good at what he does. And I'm sure we'll see him again in some way, shape or form. And it wouldn't surprise me if we see him again in RTE.
Unusual to see this kind of dirty linen being washed in public, though, Ellen, isn't it?
It's glorious. I mean, we all love gossip. And I do think, you know, no disrespect to radio, obviously a fantastic medium, but does it command too much attention? Like, our radio star is kind of like the preeminent celebrities in Ireland. I think that
right and proper, Ellen. Right and proper.
I mean, I think all of this is kind of the aftershock of the Ryan Tuberty scandal and everything that happened in RTÉ in the summer of 2023. I think Conor is correct. I think the era, unfortunately, Anton, of presenters commanding six-figure sums and that going down well with the public is over. I also think that, you know, Patricia Monaghan is talking about how that particular slot, the former Ray Darcy slot, people were kind of had enough of talk radio by that point in the day and had to move to music. I think it would be interesting to see, does Radio 1 have to start to adopt more of a commercial model than we previously would have seen in a public service broadcaster? I mean, I don't think a kind of mid-afternoon chat show is necessarily public service broadcasting, but I think the move to music shows that maybe Radio 1 is trying to become a bit more competitive. And I also just think with the diversification of the media market, the fact that podcasts are so strong, like the Inside Politics podcast, for just one random example, I think that RTÉ needs to work harder to justify the license fee that it benefits, particularly at a point in time when the government...
Do you define that hard work as delivering commercially on ratings or delivering the kind of public service content that includes Irish language, history, culture, all of that kind of stuff?
Well, I think some people have made this point that, you know, if Radio 1 is supposed to be the flagship public service broadcasting station, should it be so dominated by politics and current affairs? Obviously, it suits someone like me, but I'm anomalous because a lot of people under 35 don't listen to RTÉ Radio 1 full stop. So should there be more of a focus on drama, arts, Irish language? And it's a bit of a sensitive subject for RTÉ because a lot of people felt in the aftermath of the Ryan Tuberty payment scandal that the core problem there was that commercial interests were being blurred with public service broadcasting, and that's how they found themselves in that mess in the first place. So I think there's definitely a strong sense in RTÉ that they have to get this right, that public morale is so low. I think it's so funny how the ads are like, the licence fee, you don't have to pay it. Like, I think that's such a concession that people hate it, that they have to get this right.
The collection is down by about 30% at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, and I was actually listening to the guy who voices the ad is Killian Sunderman, the comedian, and I listened to his own podcast, and he said that when they were doing it, they were like, the license fee is something like, you know, it's the law. And they were like, could you kind of say it's the law and make it sound like it's not the law? So he was like, it's the law. Like, I just think that we're in such a difficult space now where people are so reluctant to pay the license fee that RTÉ has to make it clear to people that they're getting value for money.
Final thing, the Examiner is reporting that Westlife are going to be, they've announced their special homecoming gigs at Dublin's 3 Arena and Belfast SSE Arena. Now, Conor, this is the thing that I was fascinated about by Oasis. I was watching Oasis thinking, I was around for the first time. I don't remember them being that popular. I don't remember that kind of craze. Presumably, these lads are going to make an absolute fortune off another nostalgia run, just like Oasis did.
One would imagine dump trucks full of cash pouring their way into Westlife's coffers. I don't know what they're going to do by way of dynamic pricing, but it's another example of you know, the teeny bop band of its day now playing to its former fans who are the affluent generation, the ones with money. It's a little bit sobering when a band that you were too old for first time around is now doing a nostalgia tour, but listen, let them swear it all over again. Good luck to them. And I do remember back in their heyday, while, you know, I wasn't particularly their target market and I was not that fanboy. But I remember at the time thinking that, you know, there are a lot of paint-by-numbers pop bands out there, girl bands and boy bands doing their act and doing their product. And it was good to see that the ones who were the most successful were the Irish one. I mean, they were a really slick act in their time. You might be dismissive of boy bands, but if you're looking at boy bands, they were perhaps the very best. And they're Irish. Good luck to them, including strong Sligo representation, which is badly needed if you're going to be a boy band.
Will you be attending any of these gigs in either the SSE or the 3 Arena?
Well, I think, like the genetic Fianna Fáilers who'll be voting for Jim Gavin, I think for women my age of a certain millennial vintage, it's a primal instinct to buy a Westlife ticket when it goes on sale. So I'd say you can be assured that I'll be there in some shape or form.
Ellen, thank you very much. Ellen Coyne, for the little correspondent with the Irish Times, and Conor Faulkner, consultant and advisor, and of course advisor to the Royal Irish Automobile Club and commentator on all things transport.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.